So, first question, how many people here were in the last presentation I did? Okay, you guys are interested about HTML, JavaScript. That's interesting to know. So, I started with the basics of HTML and JavaScript just to give an idea of architecture. I really like to see the questions you guys are having. I've heard a few questions during the break time. I think there's a lot about how much of the web can I use here? Why should I build a Windows 8 app and not just stay with the web? In this session and in the next session, I'll talk a lot about this and why does it make a difference? Go for JavaScript, go for XAML, and things like that. And this presentation, I will mostly be talking about my experience building one app. I started building for myself, which is a news reader. And then it's funny because when I built it, I had no intention to show or whatever. I was just building because I wanted a news reader that in a specific way just to use personally. And then people started to ask, oh, how did you do this? How did you do that? And they started, okay, I can show it. And so you see that my code is not very pretty because I didn't build it to actually show to anyone, but it's interesting to show some concepts around as well. But so I would like to start talking about DAOs and personality and why I think it makes a lot of sense to actually step outside the little box of the libraries that you already have there and think about building your own controls, your own ideas, and I'll show some examples of apps I think that they do it quite well. Then I'll show a lot about this app I've built and how I built it and the challenges I had and the problems I had and why I tried to do this and didn't work, and then I tried to do that and didn't work. Then I switched it over from XAML to JavaScript and had other problems and how I solved those problems and really show more in details how what it takes to actually step out of Win.js and start building your own controls. There is a lot there to share. So, DAOs. I find it, by one hand, I really love what's happening with your user interface in Windows 8 and Windows Phone. I think it has been a long time since I don't see we, Microsoft, taking such a big step and say, let's rethink this whole thing in a different way. So, I find it very exciting. But by the other hand, I'm concerned with how people have been using DAOs. And I think when we initially look at Windows 8 and Windows Phone, you see those little square things all over the place, and you think, well, all right, I get it. So that's how I've been with Windows 8 applications, right? So I will use DAOs all over the place, right? And I have DAOs everywhere, right? And that's not necessarily a good thing. And I want to show why I think it works in some cases and doesn't work in other cases. So first, let's talk about what I think DAOs do very well. If you're working on your phone or on a tablet and you open a web page and you have hyperlinks don't feel quite right with touch. I don't know if you guys have the same impression. I have that impression. I open a page, has a bunch of hyperlinks. I always feel like I'm going to press the wrong one because it's very small and they're all together. And some of them, you cannot even tell if it's a hyperlink. Only if you move the mouse on it, that's when you hover it, and then it shows, oh, actually, that's a hyperlink. I cannot hover with a touch, right? So hyperlinks, they don't feel quite right when you're using touch interfaces. And I think what's cool about DAOs is that they're telling you, hey, I'm here. This whole area is touchable, right? It works well with mouse, but it works very well with touch. They display a little bit of information, right? So in that aspect, I really love how tiles work, and that's why you open Windows Phone, the first screen, Windows 8, the first screen, they show the tiles because that's very easy to reach and touch or click or whatever. So that part I like, and I really like how they actually can give hints. You are searching your phone book, not only the tiles show where you can click, but they already disable areas to say, hey, don't even bother clicking this letter because you don't have anything here, right? So I already filter it, already show what you can click, what you cannot click. So they really help to make the touch experience a little bit better. And one thing that people often forget is in Windows Phone, for example, whenever you switch to a very long list of things, they take out the tiles away, right? So you're looking at the top podcasts. Okay, you see lots of tiles there because you're going to have, what, 10 like top podcasts or something like that. But when you switch to a song list, you're likely going to have hundreds or thousands of files there. You won't put a tile per item just because it's such a long list. It doesn't make sense anymore. So my first impression is if you're dealing with very long lists, consider getting away from tiles. The tiles might not be helping anymore. And I've seen user interface where you have lots and lots of tiles and keep scrolling forever. That doesn't work so well. And people say, wow, but Windows is like that, right? You open the home screen, you have all those tiles. Well, you have the tiles you actually want to have there. It's funny because I test a lot of these things with my wife, right? She's my experience subject for these things. So I got a Windows 8 tablet for her. First thing she did, she's not technical at all. She's a Mac user, unfortunately. And she looked at those tiles and say, what is this tile for? And I explained to her, she said, I don't need this, remove. What about this one? I don't need this, remove. And she started removing everything she didn't care about. And she ended up with a screen with like a 10 or so tiles. When she learned that everything else she could search for, why bother having everything in the home screen, right? And that gave me a sensation of, okay, my home screen like has, I don't know how many hundreds of tiles there, but to me that's okay, but for her it's not, right? She prefers a simple thing. She's used to Windows Phone, she uses Windows Phone, and she knows that if she wants just a few shortcuts, they are there in the home screen, but once she moves away from there, then she can see the whole list of apps, and that's a long list, and so on. So there must be this balance, right, between when to use tiles and when not to use tiles. So I like tiles because they give you some, they're easy to touch, they're easy to click, they give an area that you're comfortable to touch and know you're not going to miss it. They tell you they're clickable. So another good reason for not using tiles, if you touch them and they don't do anything, why you have a tile, right? I see UIs where they have tiles there, you touch it, and it's just an image there. It doesn't do anything. So why you have a tile? Because this is telling me I can click here, right? They give you a brief information, but brief information. So I've seen people creating tiles with like 10 icons on them, plus text, plus images. What are you trying to tell me? Can I click on those icons? That's too much information. Maybe there shouldn't be a tile there. It should be something else. Or you shouldn't be showing so much information right away in a tile, right? It feels a little bit cluttered, right? Full of things. So this tells me there are places where you don't want to show tiles, right? So if you have too many items to display, you're just showing data, you're not making it clickable or anything, right? Consider not using tiles. And there are so many other things you can do without tiles. So I will show a little bit of that as well. And I think this has a lot to do with your application's personality. So I'll show a couple of applications that I really, really love. One is OneNote and Max. And that's a funny thing. Like some people say, well, but OneNote and Max has less functionality than OneNote Desktop. So why do you like it? Let me show you. So I open OneNote. And can I move here? Yeah. So there's one thing about OneNote and Max that I really, really like. It's this, right? You select a text, and you see this little guy here, right? And you click on this guy, and you have this funny menu here that you can drill down into colors, and you can look at this, you can come back. And sometimes I get myself playing with this during meetings, like just because I like it, right? And but then I start thinking, why do I like this thing so much? First, it's not a common thing in Windows 8 apps. You don't see other apps doing this. It's different. So it's something when I think about OneNote and Max, I remember about this thing. And I smile. I think, oh, that's cool, right? But then it also reminds me that it can deliver a lot in a very small area of the screen. Right? Imagine if they try to do this with, for example, an app bar. Right? So I put an app bar here. Imagine putting all this stuff here. It would be terrible. Right? It would be really hard to use it. And it's context sensitive. So it knows, for example, here I have a bunch of options. Right? Here I have another bunch of options. So it knows what I'm doing, and it's trying to help me. It works with touch, it works with mouse. But what I really, really like it is because someone in that product team say, hey, you know what? Why should we just use styles and menus and drop-downs? Let's do this. It's cool. It's different, right? And it worked. Then I like applications like, for example, there is another application, Cocktail Flow. This is a well-known one, right? Lots of people know about it. I'm not much of a drinker, but I feel like I want to become a more drinker just for using this app, because it's really, maybe that's not a good thing. But what I like about it, I don't see tiles here, right? Those things are not tiles, right? They are not shaped images or anything like that. They're actual images from the drinks, right? I can see. But when I look at it, it's not violating anything about Windows 8 design rules and principles. Actually, it's following those principles quite well, right? This is about being simple, it's fluid, it's easy to navigate, it works with mouse, it works with touch, it works well on the phone, it works well on tablets, on desktops. So I like it. I like it because it has its own identity. It doesn't stay in the constraints of squares and everything. And I think there's nothing wrong about it, right? There's nothing wrong about going beyond those guidelines as long as you keep in mind some basic rules about always making it simple, making it dynamic. You can do those things. So, of course, this can be more or less easy to do depending on what you want to achieve. So, when do you create a custom control? Well, there are many cases where you need to go beyond what's already there out of the box. I had a situation myself, I'll talk about it. It might be just because you want to give a different look and feel. It might be because you're delivering a different functionality that's not there out of the box, or you want to make it different, or just because you want to give a different personality to your app. You want to do something different. You're not satisfied with the options you have inside the library. So when I first got Windows 8, in the early days, what I wanted to do is I wanted to build a newsreader that was more, let's say, would fit better to my needs as a newsreader, right? I'm a big newsreader, like I'm really addicted to reading news all the time. I like to be hooked into what's going on in different areas. So I started working with something like this, and initially was in XAML C#. So I wanted a newsreader that starts asking, hey, what do you want to read about? Oh, I want to read about these topics. And then I can customize what news sources, because I'm very picky. I want to go there and say, I want to read about this, but not that, and this, not that. I want to assemble them in the way I want. But more importantly, I want to be able to, for example, when I click in a news source, I want to, instead of showing just the brief information, I want to show more about the news source, right? I want to be able to hold it on a tablet and display as much information as I can right away. Even if there are hyperlinks, I want to be able to click on those hyperlinks, right? If I want to resize something, I can just touch and resize it, right? And just scroll it and do whatever I want. It should be... If I use on my desktop, it should work on my desktop. If I use on my tablet, it should work on my tablet just the same way, right? If I want to use keyboard to navigate, I should be able to use keyboard. If I want to use touch, and so on. So news, if you download RSS feeds, you're downloading HTML, right? You're going to display HTML. So if you build this in XAML, the only option you have to really display HTML is the web viewer control, right? Now, the web viewer has a few limitations. So for example, depending on the news source, the amount of content I get is very different. So for example, if I open Dilbert, there's small little things there. Right? Each news item is very small. Some articles are huge, right? Depending on the news source, they have several columns long. So I need to dynamically resize my content, right? I need to look at the images, I need to look at the text and everything else, and I need to make sure they fit on the screen vertically and they stretch horizontally. Well, that's not that simple to achieve because you have to load your HTML, you have to load the images, then you have to look at the images and see which ones are too large, resize them. That's not a very nice thing to do on the client because it costs a lot of performance, especially in low-spec machines. Then you have to say, well, don't grow beyond this height because that's my screen size. And then tell me, how far did I get? Okay, I got this far, I got this wide. Okay, let's go to the web viewer and resize it. Well, that turns out to be very slow, right? And then I would have to have, well, two options. One is I'll need a one web viewer per item, right? So every new item will be an individual web viewer, and that's very heavy, very hard to achieve. Or I use a single web viewer all over the place, right? But then I'll end up writing so much JavaScript, then what's the point? Why did I choose XAML and C# and writing JavaScript to make this work anyway? But that's okay, that's achievable. You can do that in WebViewer, right? But then you notice the background is gradient, right? So when I scroll, for example, if you look at the logo feels like it changes the color, but it's not the logo that's changing the color, it's the background that's changing the color. So each news item has a little bit of a transparency. Well, guess what? WebViewer doesn't allow transparency. Well, there is a trick. You can go to the WebViewer, take a snapshot, transform into a bitmap, hide the web viewer, and then you can make whatever you want. But when you do this, first, it costs performance. And second, I cannot click on the hyperlinks anymore. So there you go. I lost another thing I wanted to do here. So I started to have problems like this, and testing on low-spec machines was getting quite obvious this would not work this way. So I say, well, I'm dealing with HTML, right? I'm going to render HTML all over the place. So I guess it makes sense to build a HTML and JavaScript application. So I'll build a HTML JavaScript application, and I use the list view to do this, because WinJS has a list view. Well, guess what? List view doesn't allow this. So let me explain why. If I go to Visual Studio, I wanted to build, let me show this here. I started saying, well, this is very close to the grid app sample here, right? The grid app says, if I run, it has a menu with tiles, right? I click on a tile and I show stuff like this. Oh, yeah, that kind of feels like my news reader. So yeah, I'll start that way. But the problem is, if I debug this, let me actually put this to run on a simulator, see if that works. So, it's here. So here's the simulator, right? Let me get Visual Studio and put it here. Now, let me show a little problem. This is the document object model explorer. So this allows me to move the mouse, right, and find out what in the screen represents what. This is what I wanted to show the last presentation, some debugging tricks. So this, for example, helps me a lot with debugging if something's not looking right, right? You can just drill down and say, well, that there you go. There's some div here. I want to go to specific tiles just to show what's happening here. So this is the div again. There's a lot of stuff going on here. And that's not what I want. Oh, there you go. So these are, no, it's not here. Where am I? I got lost. A little bit above. That's not it. That's not it. What I want. Oh, there you go. This one. Yeah. So these are the tiles, right? So if I move the mouse, I can see each one of them. Look at what WinJS does. It sets a style, and it says it will appear in the coordinates 70 pixels left, 307 pixels top. So WinJS hard codes where the tile is going to show up. That works really well if my tile has a predefined size, right? They're all square-like. They're all the same sizes. So WinJS can guess and say, oh, this is going to show in these places. But if you have variable size tiles, each one will be a different size, how can WinJS figure that out? Well, it actually does, right? You can actually tell WinJS, hey, for each one of these list items, I will tell you how large it is. Okay, maybe I can deal with that this way. But it turns out you have to know the sizes before you show them. Now, I have a problem because I'm downloading content from the web. I don't have the images yet. I didn't display it. I have to actually display it, download the images, put everything together, and then I figure out how large it's going to be so I can tell WinJS, hey, this is how large this is going to be. WinJS doesn't do that. The list view doesn't do that, right? And I try to hack it in all possible ways I could, and it doesn't do that. And because I'm very stubborn, I say, I want to make it work this way. So I decided to throw away the list view and build my own list view. And there are quite a few challenges if you do that, because if you use the list view out of the box, it does a lot for you, right? It implements all the keyboard navigation, all the mouse navigation, all the touch navigation, all the gesture support. All of that is already there out of the box. If you say, I'm not using this, I'm building my own, there you go. You have to build all of that. You have to do all the data binding by yourself. You have to do all the navigation by yourself, and so on. And I said, well, I will try to see just what happens. And I did it, but it was a lot of work, right? So it's the kind of thing that you have to consider. And that's a funny thing, because although this app works well for me, I know some people that don't like it, and they say, nah, I prefer other apps. That's fine. For me, it's what I wanted, right? I like this feeling of a newspaper, so there you go. So I had all these problems, and I will show a little bit about how I actually sorted some of them. And I'll talk a little bit about some tricks to keep in mind. So how much work was it? Well, in the last presentation, I was talking about the page navigation model and how you have a default page that hosts other pages inside of it. Well, guess what? It's not different than this, right? You pretend you're creating another page, and then you customize it as much as you want to say, this is actually a control on another page and has properties and has events and can be data bound, and you can link to data, you can add navigation support and everything. That's pretty much typical HTML, and JavaScript is totally up to you. You can use other libraries. You can build everything by your own. You can mix with WinJS and so on. But at least you should support some basic things that Windows 8 expects you to do. So that's where you have to be a little bit careful. So for example, let me actually open this app here, the source code. I think this one is a good one. So this app has a page. Let me zoom this. Right? And here is where it gets interesting. So there is a control here, which is not in the WinJS. It's a control I've created. So I'm putting this in a div, right? I'm doing some styling on it, that style sheet. And I say, hey, actually, this links to a bunch of JavaScript code. And this is what defines what this control actually does, or how it looks like, how it behaves, right? And I would define what this class means. So then there is another JavaScript here, which is this one, where if I go right to the bottom, I think, and I zoom it, I'm saying, hey, I'm defining this namespace, right? Which is part of the name I'm using there. And this namespace has this property, this class, right? Which, if you try to instantiate, is going to run this constructor, which is pretty much this code here, right? It's a constructor. And I say, hey, constructor, you define what a page is. So there goes your HTML, and there goes your code behind. And you have a bunch of events and properties, right? Data source, so I can actually bind to data, right? Template, so I can actually apply templates to my items, like a list view does. So any list view in XAML, in HTML, like you have the list view and you have the templates for the items. So it's not different what I'm doing here. So basically, I'm actually creating a control. And it's not different than actually creating a page, right? And all the data binding work, all the properties and everything, it's all up to you to build. And it then becomes a question on how far you want to go and how much functionality you wanted to implement. To me, this became more like a fun thing to try to see how far I could go and actually try to support gestures myself and navigation and everything and see if I could replicate what the normal list view does. And to be honest, I spent probably, I would guess, 3 months, 1 hour a day or something building this, and I'm not even close to support what the list view in WinJS does. For example, the list view in WinJS is very memory aware, so it can actually tell it to dynamically load and dynamically unload items as we scroll left and right. I didn't even try to go there because it would be too much work, right? So there are a few things like that you have to consider if you really want to jump away. But basically, that's the minimum code you need to actually say, I'm creating a new control, and I can declare in a page, and it will run. And of course, you have things like the render method, where you actually tell what HTML you're going to spit out of it in JavaScript, right? So you can actually build it yourself. I'll show this a little bit later. So let's talk a little bit about rendering. So the basics of rendering, like if I look at the definition of this render method, let's see if I can jump it from here. The render method is a standard method in the Windows, in WinJS controls, right? So basically, you receive the host element, so the HTML element that's hosting your control, and whatever options that when I declare a control, I can initialize with a few properties, right? I can say, well, I start binding to this list or whatever, right? And then it's up to you to really say, well, I'm going to use standard JavaScript to say create elements, right? Set classes, append child. This is a standard HTML, right? Add event listeners and so on. So from that point on, like what you're really doing is just talking to the document object model and creating things by yourself. And you have to be careful here because there are things you're allowed to do and there are things you're not allowed to do. So a big no for this kind of work is you don't write JavaScript. You don't get JavaScript that writes more JavaScript. Because you have to remember, this is not a browser, right? This is a Windows 8 app. It has access to things a normal browser doesn't have. It can access your file system. It can access your credentials. Right? Depends on what you enable. So if your app now writes dynamic JavaScript, for example, if my app downloads JavaScript from a web server and runs it locally, wrong things can happen there from the security point of view. So what the Windows team says is, nah, right? It's your app should be packaged with the JavaScript it needs to actually run. Anything else you download or you generate should not be JavaScript. Oh, but I want to download the news source, the page. So that's okay if you put in a web container. You put in a iframe and say, this is actually a web container. It cannot do anything that my app does. So it's a different JavaScript that doesn't have access to the Win.js. It's just like a browser, right? So we have to be careful with that, because part of the questions I've heard during the break was, oh, so I can just get my code and jQuery and blah, 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 just bring it over to a Windows 8 app and just run? Yes and no. Yes, because in theory, all JavaScript works the same way, but there are security constraints in place that a typical web application doesn't have. And we enforce those things, and the App Store check those things. If you try to submit an app, they will check those things, and they may fail your application because of this. Right? Even if you're 100% sure you're generating JavaScript that's safe, it's something they don't like. Like, for example, in JavaScript, you have this thing called eval, right? So you can put a string there, and it just turns into JavaScript and just runs. That's pretty dangerous, right? If it's a local running app with access to your file system, because who knows, right? Maybe I compromise your web server, and you're downloading JavaScript from there. Now I'm running that JavaScript locally in your machine, and I can do a lot with that, right? So basically, you have to really start building all these things by yourself if you go down this path. And there are different approaches here. One is you can grab, for example, I went down the path of really writing every HTML using script. I didn't have to do that. I could have a bunch of HTML templates. I just grab a copy and insert here, but I wanted to actually build everything from JavaScript itself. As a personal preference, I wanted to try that way. So it ends up being a lot of code, right? I had to do a lot of things here. So data binding, that's another interesting topic. I wanted to build an actual list view. So I wanted to support what a list view does. List view allows me to bind a list. So I have a bunch of data, JSON, whatever. I create a list and say bind here, right? This is your data source, like you do in XAML. I wanted to do the same. Turns out that's a lot of code as well, because what I had to do was, for example, let me go back here on my controller, data source. So I wanted to use a syntax that's very close to Win.js. So let me zoom in here. So in Win.js, what you do, you get your list view and you set options, right? You can say, this is my data source. This is what it comes from. So that's my list view. I'm setting a data source, and this can be whatever you want, right? It can be, in my case, it's a view model that brings this data source, right? You can have groups, you can have items, and then you can apply layouts. So that's a normal list view. So if I go further, this is, no, not it. That's not it. There we go. So this is my custom list view, and I wanted to use a very similar syntax, right? I wanted to be able to say, this is my data source, and this is the template for each list item. So the way I did it was actually creating these properties inside the list view. I say, there is going to be a property called itemsDataSource. There is going to be a property itemsTemplate. And I will have to write the code to actually read those properties and do whatever they're supposed to do, right? So if I look at my list view control again, which is this one, you see that here, I have those properties defined, right? The template and the data source. And I tell how those things work. manually, right? Now, WinJS helps here because WinJS has this control called template. And what the template allows you to do is to write a bunch of HTML where you map the data binding. You say, well, this is going to be the field name blah that comes from my list. This is going to be very similar to XAML. So if I try to search for template, you see this happening not here, not here, not here. Actually, I think I just passed by. So actually it's in the HTML. The reason why I look in there, not here, is because I couldn't make just one screen to show them both for some funny reason, but that's okay. I can kind of read it here. So that's not the one, it's the feed pages, this one. So this is my control, right? And I have up here somewhere, item template. So this is a standard WinJS binding template item. And basically what this does is I define the HTML I want to replace in every new item I'm going to display, to the point where I actually say, hey, I want you to bind to this field, right? So this div here, for example, which is the summary, it's actually binding. It's going to display the HTML content that comes from a field called summary that my list has. So I didn't have to reinvent this. I say, well, I can actually use WinJS for this because it works for me. Basically what this does is in my code, I'll have to call this guy and say, hey, grab this template that's called item template and apply to this data item and get me the HTML out of it because they're gonna render this. So if I show this in my code, you see that it's here, no. It's here, template, no. I think it's here. Nope. See, I'm getting lost. Not this. The render. Ah, there you go. Here. So what happens is, oh boy, you zoom here. So you can do this funny thing. You can say, I have a template, an item template. I'm grabbing this from the HTML and giving it to this variable. So I want the WinJS to process it. And the way I do this, I say, hey, template, render this data on this HTML div, right? So it knows it has a template. I have a data item with all the properties this template is looking for, right? And it's saying, use both, and whatever you get out of this, throw in this result, which is a new div I just created here. So what you will do is what internally WinJS does for the list views and everything. Like it gets the template, it gets the data item, put together, proxies it, and say, oh, I need to map this field, generates the HTML out, and now I can get this HTML and do whatever you want with it, right? Just display. And you'll notice that all these things are asynchronous. So in JavaScript, whenever you have an asynchronous process, a promise, you have this then thing, right? So I say, hey, I know this is going to take a while. When it finishes, run this function. And I know this is going to take a while as well. When it finishes, run this other function. So it's different than C# where you put a wait everywhere. Like in JavaScript, it's a little bit harder to read because you start creating inner. Like there are other ways of doing this, but most people end up doing this way, where you put inner functions inside inner functions, and can get a little bit ugly if you're not careful. Like it's already a bit ugly here. But basically, I'm saying, well, I'm giving the WinJS some time to process this, and when it finishes, I will do some work on this HTML to actually fix whatever is still left to fix, right? But the whole point here is you can leverage the whole data binding from WinJS itself in your code. And if you didn't want to use WinJS, there are other libraries you can play with. So Knockout.js is a very well-known one, especially for those who come from XAML. The guys who built Knockout.js, they actually wanted to do something very similar to XAML. So it has a very similar binding syntax and everything as you have here. So basically, you decorate your HTML and say which attributes map to what fields, and then it does the processing for you, like just like XAML does, right? So you can do data binding your custom controls. That's an interesting thing you can do as well. One thing I didn't mention, I was going to mention in the other presentation, is 9 in every 10 questions I get, which are like, how do I do this in Windows 8? Usually the answer is, if you open the samples package for Windows 8, it's there, someone built it. So if you've never seen this before, go to MSDN. Let me open here for you guys. There you go. So you open MSDN, you go to Windows, download tools, right? And then you have this thing called sample application pack, 300 megs, right? And it's a whole bunch of very small apps you have in JavaScript, you have in C#, you have in C++. In many cases, they do the same in all languages. So this is how I do it in C#, this is how I do it in JavaScript. So it's very, to me, it's the best way of learning how to do the basic things, because I like to actually sometimes open a C# and a JavaScript sample to see how they did the same thing on both. You can compare. So if you know one language more than the other, it's a great bridge to cross, right, and learn. And a lot of what I'm talking about here, there are samples there showing the basics of this working. So for example, in this particular case, there is a sample. I already have downloaded this in my machine. So there is a sample called, these are all the samples that come in this thing. Each folder has a bunch of demos and everything. So there is one called HTML page controls sample, right? And they're showing pretty much the basics of what I was talking about. They're showing, let me show it here. They're showing different ways they can create a component, a page. And there are 4 different ways you can instantiate this. Let me zoom this, make it easier. So they show how to create it with just declaring it in your HTML. So I can say, hey, I'm going to create this custom control by just declaring it here, right? And giving a bunch of initialization parameters, right? I will initialize with these properties. So when it's created, it already comes with this populated. Or you can do it programmatically, right? And it shows, there is a JavaScript here that shows this being created programmatically. So I think it's this one here. No, it's not this one. I think it's this one. Yep. So it shows how you can create the control programmatically in different ways. So one is using the render method I was talking about. So I say, render this HTML, right? This is the host where this HTML is going to show, right? And the HTML is already mapped to the control. Or I can use, I think this other example uses the, it calls the constructor of your class directly, right? Which is a different way of doing the same thing. So there are all these variations of creating a HTML control. And you see that if I show you the actual control, which I think it's this one. No, actually, it's the JavaScript. It's this one here. No. This is how you define the control, right? And saying, hey, this is the code behind for my page. It's pretty much like you create any other page, right? I will support these events, right? I will implement those things manually. And this is how I render it, right? And this is the code I will do for rendering it. So it can go from simple scenarios like this to super complicated scenarios like the one I was showing my app. So it's really up to you and how much customization you want to do, right? So it's a good sample to play with, because it really helps getting this concept that there is no difference between a page and a control. They're the same thing in this environment, right? So reinventing the wheel, and that's where things get tricky, right? Because you decide to build your own controls, you start having all these problems, right? Data binding, gestures, navigation with keyboard. I remember when I started building this, I had a conversation with a guy from the product team, and he said, are you sure you're going to build your own list view? Yeah, well, how hard can it be? Well, have you considered that the amount of work to support gestures and keyboard navigation, that's a lot of work? And at the time, it didn't sound so much, but then later on, I realized why he was right. So for example, a few problems I had. Did I close it? No, it's here. Hyperlinks. For example, if I use tab, I can navigate into the news contents, right? But HTML by default, if you use tab, it will stop in every hyperlink. So initially, by just hitting tab, it wasn't smart enough to know, oh, I have to stop here and highlight this whole thing. It was drilling down into every single hyperlink I had. So what I have to do is actually scan all the hyperlinks and set the tab index to -1 so it knows, oh, okay, I don't have to stop there. Just keep going for the other news. And then I had to set the proper tab indexes for each big div so it knows it has to stop in each one of them, make them focusable, right? They can be focused. So all these things are you have to do manually, right? Then it came the problem with the gestures. So if I want to select an item, so in tiles and list views, you have this cross-select option, like you just drill down and up so it knows you're selecting it. But here, I can zoom, right? So if I use this gesture of selecting, now I'm actually scrolling, not selecting anymore. So that's why you have to be careful with, are you going to support vertical scrolling? Because if you do, what are you going to use to select things now? Because you cannot do both, right? And that's why one recommendation from the product team is you shouldn't be doing vertical and horizontal scrolling together. They told me that. So you shouldn't be playing with this because the user can get lost here. But my assumption was, well, if you're not zooming it, then there's no vertical scroll. You're fine. And if you're zooming in, then that's how IE works, right? That's how Chrome works. If you're zooming in, you can scroll everywhere. That's up to you, right? So my assumption is this would work with users, at least works with me. But then I had to figure out, oh, okay, so what if I want to share this content? How can I tell I want to select this? So some applications, they rely on the share bar, right? So go here and say, I want to share something. And I was like, well, with touch, that's not working for me because I don't have the cross-select option. So I decided to add these little icons on the top so I can actually click here. And I have a bunch of options. One of them is saying, I want to share, right? So it already knows I can share and what I can share. And here's another trick. What happens here is, where am I? Hello? I lost my cursor. Ah, here I am. And here's another trick. I can share links or I can share content. What's the difference? When you share a URL, there is a bunch of applications can understand that. When you share HTML, there is another bunch of applications that can understand that. So for example, if I say I want to share the content, I don't have Facebook here as an option. I have the Mail app, right? Because the Mail app can receive a bunch of HTML that I customize, right? I remove all the columns and everything, and I can send that content over. But Facebook doesn't allow that, right? Facebook doesn't support this. So for Facebook, I have to share the link, right? So now I can share it to Facebook, right? And if I try to use the Mail app, what the Mail app will do now is say, okay, I got your link. So I'm going online and getting a summary of what this link means, right? So I don't have the control over the content anymore, right? So what I figure is I want both options, right? And I don't know if that works for every user, but works for me. So again, I'm building this for me, right? So just raising those interesting decisions I've made. So these are the kind of concerns you have to have if you're reinventing the whole thing, right? You're reinventing the, if you stay with the standard WinJS list view and everything, lots of these problems are already answered for you. So you don't have to go down this path. Then, of course, animations and large data sets. For example, my list view is terrible for dealing with large data sets. It's not memory efficient because I load everything and shows a single page. The WinJS list view, you scroll, it keeps loading and unloading things. You can even control how it does that. You can control paging, you can control dynamic loading, things that I say, I'm not going to do this. But guess what? I had problems because it was working fine on my Intel i7 machine. First time I tried to run on a Atom PC or a Surface, performance got really bad, right? So I had to work with that. So then I had to analyze what was causing performance problems, and I figured most of it was image resizing. Image resizing is a very bad thing to do in the client. If I had a web service, I would probably do those things on the web service instead, but I don't. So I had to do this on the client. So I had to find a trick to not cause performance problems on low-spec machines. So what I did was, I have a setting here called, it's not account, privacy statement, is this one? Yeah. I have a setting here called make it fast, right? And what this does, it looks, when it loads the news, it checks for any article that has more than one image. Some bloggers, they like to put summaries that are like 10 pages long with 100 images at all high resolution. There's not a chance an Atom PC can deal with that. So what I do if you enable this option, it is enabled by default, is if an article has more than one image, I will just show the first one. If you want to see the other ones, open it on your browser. Right? Works. So I had to do this so it could work on both machines. So when you publish your app on the App Store, they ask you what's the minimum configuration you require for your app. You can even put a recommended configuration, right? You can say, well, to run this app, you should use an Intel i5 machine and blah, blah, blah. So, right, it has an acceptable performance. So you can give a little bit of a help to the user so they know what to expect, right? Because remember, part of this certification process, they test how quickly your application loads, right? If your application doesn't load quickly enough, first, Windows will kill it, because Windows gives you a time for your application to load up. So if it takes too long, Windows gives up, right? And second, they will test the performance during the certification process. And if the performance is not good enough, they will fail your app, right? And say, we tested here, it's not functional. So you have to consider that. So so always test in low spec machines, definitely. So yes, I was talking about it. Asynchronous in JavaScript. So this is another interesting, do you have time? Yes. It's very important to understand the difference between asynchronous and multi-thread, right? JavaScript is asynchronous. Lots of the things you do in JavaScript, they are asynchronous, but JavaScript is essentially a single-thread environment. So it sounds like different things, right? When the problem is you're downloading a bunch of data. You're downloading your news content. During the download process, you want to be notified, oh, just got a new one. And you want to update the screen and say, hey, download process, 10%, 20%, 100%, right? Well, it turns out if your JavaScript is busy doing the download, your UI is in the same thread as the download is doing, right? Just because you tell the UI, hey, refresh, I don't have time for it. I'm busy doing your download thing here. Now you have to actually separate threads, and JavaScript is not very good with that, right? You can use web workers. I personally don't like web workers at all. I don't like the syntax. I don't like the restrictions. I don't like the limitations. So what I do C#, and I mix C# with JavaScript. So what I have here is in my application, you see that beyond the, no, it's not this one, it's the other one. Beyond my JavaScript, I have a C# library. It's pretty much a DLL, right? And the C# library does all this asynchronous stuff that the normal JavaScript cannot handle. So I can do like asynchronous operations, right? I can create threads. I can do asynchronous work. I can do a whole bunch of things here, right? And return those results to JavaScript. And JavaScript can speak directly to my C# library or C++ library. So now I have the best of both worlds, right? I have, in my opinion, in terms of design, visual design, I think HTML is in a better place than XAML. Just look around and see how many designers you find that know HTML and how many designers you find that know XAML, right? You find way more designers that are HTML experienced. So you can leverage those guys, right? You can get those guys to build your design, and then you can build most of the plumbing of your app in C# and just call it from JavaScript. And I think this is a model that for me works very well, has been working very well. There are a few things you have to be careful about. Obviously, JavaScript doesn't understand all the data types that C# does. So for example, if you have a method that returns date time, JavaScript doesn't do date time, right? So you have to return date time offset. That JavaScript can understand. So you have to be very careful with those what we call projections. But if you do it carefully, then now you have best of both worlds and can really leverage both sides. If I had the other way around, if I had the user interface in C# and XAML, I cannot call a library in JavaScript, only if I use the web viewer. So it's not really the ideal there, right? So to me, this is a big reason why this combination makes a lot of sense, right? So then I can leverage asynchronous work here as well. We call this kind of library WRC, Windows Runtime Component. So in Visual Studio, you can always create it as a new project that can go to C#, Windows Store, and they have a Windows Runtime Component, right? And when you choose that kind of library, Visual Studio enforces a few things because it knows, well, you could be using this library from a XAML app, you could be using this library from a C++ app, from a JavaScript app. So I'll set some rules here because there are things you're not allowed to do. But at least now you have an option to have a library that you use across different languages, right? I think there will be a presentation later today. I was reading about reusing libraries between Windows Phone and Windows 8. It has a lot to do with this, right? It has a lot to do with creating components that are reusable. And then the trick sometimes is to create the Windows Runtime Component plus a class library. So now your JavaScript UI calls your Windows Runtime Component, and your Windows Runtime Component calls your class library. And your class library is what you're probably going to reuse between Windows Phone and Windows 8. The Windows Runtime Component is just a wrapper, right? And I think, I don't know what the presentation will be talking about, but I guess that's what the recommendation they're going to make, right? Because it helps. Because in your class library, you can do way more things. So we're kind of running out of time again. So the interop tricks I have is really, you are not allowed to declare async methods in your Windows Runtime Component library, and that's why I'm using async operations with progress, because this JavaScript can understand, and when I call this from JavaScript, it turns into a promise, which is the JavaScript way of doing asynchronous work. So that allows me to actually receive notifications back from the C# library. So the C# library now can do things in parallel and then notify JavaScript, hey, I have something for you, right? Either a progress or a final result, and the JavaScript can handle that. So it's a very simple model to work with. So data bind from JavaScript and C# is tricky because when you use WinJS to do data binding, WinJS injects objects in C#, and C# doesn't allow that. So when you return arrays from C# to JavaScript, the trick is you either convert that into a JavaScript object, or you have to use special data binding tags to say, no, this is a JavaScript, so don't do a two-way binding, just a one-way binding. So there's a lot of guidance around that in the MSDN. But the thing is, remember that JavaScript assumes a bunch of things that might not be true if you're returning a C# type. So you have to be careful there. Also, about obfuscation, I'll talk about this in the next presentation. What I'm using here today is a little library that does JavaScript minification. That's not really obfuscation. And then, even if it was, remember, you don't trust client code, right? Client code can be broken. It doesn't matter which language you use. If it's JavaScript, it's C#, C++, it's on my machine, I can look at it. I can figure out, right? So always assume your client code can be compromised, always. It doesn't matter which language you choose. I've heard people saying, I'm not going to build this in JavaScript because with C# that's compiled, I'm safe. You're not safe at all, right? I can figure out what you're doing easily, right? So don't trust an obfuscation as your security. So in terms of packaging, I think I'll finish after this one. Top concerns with packaging and uploading to the App Store. I'll talk more about this in the next session, but basically, careful with your privacy policy. Always have a privacy policy in your app. Make sure if your app links to your site, finish your site. Have it complete. If you say, currently being built, they will fail your certification, but they will try to go to your website. You see if it's complete, right? It has to be there. You put a link on your app, so it has to be done, right? Don't build an app with parts of the functionality missing because they will figure out it's missing, right? Error handling. Suspend time, so your application is crashing, your application is not suspending properly. Big problem. Age rating. My news reader is 13 years old plus or something, or 16 years old plus, I forgot, because I don't control the content, right? If someone adds a whatever site they want to add there, I don't control this. I cannot tell it's safe for children. So you have to think about those things, right? Network usage. You have to be careful if you're using 3G network, because if you're using 3G network, you have to check if you're above the user's data plan limit. If you are, you cannot just keep downloading things, right? You have to tell the user, hey, if I keep downloading things, I'm going to break your data plan. Are you okay with that? Can I keep doing it? There are enforcements you have to apply in your app, right? Are rules you have to consider. Provide a test user and password, right? If your application is going to be tested by someone, that someone needs a username and password, right? Link to user registration. My application does Google Reader. Just because it supports Google Reader, it doesn't mean I'm not forced to actually provide a link for the person to actually register at Google Reader. I found that rule kind of strange. Like, I don't manage this. It's not my problem. Whereas you are, because you're providing a place where they type the username and password, you have to provide a link so they know where they create this username and password. It doesn't matter if it's not yours, right? So all these little rules you have to consider. I'll talk more about this in the next presentation. I'll stop now so you have time for questions, and I'll see you upstairs if you want to continue this conversation. Thank you.